Graham Gibson came to birdwatching later in life. He was 37 when he began trying to identify birds. As it does for so many of us, birdwatching quickly became a kind of obsession. Unlike a lot of birders, Gibson refuses to keep a life list of birds he's seen. He has put together another kind of life list, a collection of his favorite poems, stories, letters, essays, and folktales about birds. It's called The Bedside Book of Birds, an avian miscellany, and it's the product of a long life as both birder and reader. Gibson is the author of three novels, the former president of Penn Canada, and the husband of writer Margaret Atwood. So it's safe to say he had a lot of material to draw on.
I studied English and philosophy at the university many, many years ago, and I was always really impressed in reading in novels and poetry and so forth, how effective and how birds were as a symbol or as an image, a meaningful image, because at the heart of the book is my sense that we relate to birds as representing the best in us, that we associate them with spirit, we associate them with creativity, we associate them with freedom, we associate them with imagination. So when we brutalize them, as we often do, we're in some odd way doing it to ourselves.
Well, I wondered if you'd read a little bit of this for us. It's hard to choose what, of course, but the Siegfried Sassoon, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Birds feature prominently in First World War poetry because they're those poor devils who are stuck in the trenches, in the mud, and in the horror of that war, and flying all around them were larks. And it's called Everyone Sang. Everyone suddenly burst out singing, and I was filled with such delight as prison birds must find in freedom, winging wildly across the white orchards and dark green fields, on and out of sight. Everyone's voice was suddenly lifted, and beauty came like the setting sun. My heart was shaken with tears, and horror drifted away. Oh, but everyone was a bird, and the song was wordless. The singing will never be done.
You know, I always think of Siegfried Sassoon in the same situation as Wilfred Owen, who died at 25. There's another one here, and perhaps it would do as well, Isaac Rosenberg. It's toward the end, Returning, We Hear the Larks.
He was long forgotten, but he's an interesting poet. It's called Returning, We Hear the Larks. And this, again, is the First World War. Somber the night is, and though we have our lives, we know what sinister threat lurks there. Dragging these anguished limbs, we only know this poison-blasted track opens on our camp on a little safe sleep. But hark! Joy, joy, strange joy! Low heights of night ringing with unseen larks, music showering our upturned listening faces. Death could drop from the dark as easily as song, but song only dropped, like a blind man's dreams on the sand by dangerous tides, like a girl's dark hair, for she dreamed no ruin lies there, or her kisses where a serpent hides.
It's really a memorable piece,
isn't it? It is a memorable poem, yeah.
Now, you say you came to birds late. You were 37. Well, that's
yep.
still young in many ways.
Yes. It looks very young for me.
And you have noticed all your life as a scholar the appearance of birds in literature, but still the exercise of going to so many different sources and finding so many different views of birds, I suspect must have changed the way you feel about, the way you relate to birds. Is that true?
Yes, it is. I think I've intellectualized them too much. And what I'm looking forward to is when the book is over, that I can go out and just wander around in the field again and be more instinctive with them. I think one of the great delights that I have in birds, and I think one of the things that a lot of people find is that if when you go out and you go bird watching or birding or however you want to call it, on some very important level, in looking at the birds, we're looking at life itself, life on Earth, not life that's filtered through our society and our conditioning and the human experience. Birds were around for 150 million years before humans came to consciousness. They are an ancient species, they're an ancient line. And when we look at them, we are somehow tapping into that passage of time. I mean, it's interesting. We have binocular vision, which is to say we have hunter's eyes. We have to focus on something. it's hard for us to see the big picture. If we were a deer, or if we were a rabbit, or an antelope, or something, we would be seeing a much better peripheral vision. But we can't do that. We have to look at things. And when you look at, and it could be butterflies, it could be plants, but birds, because I think they are associated with our imagination and our soul, I think are richer, and perhaps lovers of butterflies would disagree with me. But when you look at them, sometimes, if you're really lucky, you become really absorbed by it. I mean, the example I use is I was once sitting on a log in a particularly nice clearing on a very vibrant day in the bush, and there were birds all around, and I was looking at them, and I was listening to them. And then I discovered that something had happened. And what had happened is that I had lost my sense of ego or self. I had simply been there. I'd simply been there in exactly the same way the stump I was sitting on, and so the birds that were around me, whatever other creatures. And that's that sort of, which I write about, that almost an ecstasy, which people say, poets say, sometimes accompany the writing of poetry, or you find it while listening to music, is that suddenly you are there, you're being there rather than passing through.
Graham Gibson's collection of bird literature and lore is called The Bedside Book of Birds.